good evening, everyone. This is Blue Caramelly. You're listening to The Divided Kingdom. This is a program that brings us some of the news, some of the things you may not hear on the regular news, and with a Christian emphasis. So I'm going to begin right away with, obviously, the big news throughout the day, the last several weeks, last week, has been this attack on Iran and possible opponent steps that Iran may be taking. So I'll lead off with something from the Gateway Pundit. This was dated March 9th, 2026, by Jim Hoft, and it says, terror warning, U.S. intercepts encrypted communication on Iranian plot to activate sleeper cells in the West. Now, I have a couple of articles on this whole matter. They are pretty much the same thing. One appeared, this first one appeared from the Gateway Pundit on the evening of March 9th, which would have been Monday. And it says, a chilling new federal alert has raised fears that the Iranian regime may be attempting to activate covert terrorist networks across the West, following the dramatic escalation of the U.S.-Iran conflict. According to an explosive federal government alert reviewed by ABC News, the U.S. has intercepted high-level encrypted communications believed to be originating from Iran. Intelligence officials believe these transmissions are not just chatter. They are an operational trigger. And we have that little phrase in quotes, operational trigger, intended to activate sleeper assets embedded right here in the West. As the Gateway Pundit has extensively reported, Iran has long threatened to unleash sleeper cells within the United States if provoked, a nightmare scenario made possible by the millions of unvetted illegals who poured across our southern border during the disastrous Biden years. But last June, TGP, that is the Gateway Pundit, revealed how Iran explicitly warned President Trump that it would activate these hidden terror networks if the U.S. dared to strike its nuclear facilities. The intercepted transmission, likely of Iranian origin, was relayed across multiple countries shortly after Khamenei's well-deserved demise in the U.S.-Israeli joint operation. ABC News reported as follows. The alert, reviewed by ABC News, cites, quote, preliminary signals analysis, unquote, of a transmission likely of Iranian origin was relayed across multiple countries shortly after the death of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, was killed in the U.S.-Israeli attack on February 28th. The intercepted transmission was encoded and appeared to be destined for, quote, clandestine recipients, unquote, who possess the encryption key, the kind of message intended to impart instructions to covert operatives or sleeper assets without the use of the internet or cellular networks. It's possible the transmission could be, quote, intended to activate or provide instructions to pre-positioned sleeper assets operating outside the originating country, unquote, the alert said. And the alert also said, while the exact contents of these transmissions cannot currently be determined, the sudden appearance of a new station with international rebroadcast characteristics warrants heightened situational awareness, unquote. While the alert is careful to say there is no operational threat tied to a specific location, it does instruct law enforcement agencies to increase their monitoring of suspicious radio frequency activity. If the contents of the alert prove true, it would confirm the fears expressed by law enforcement officials after the U.S. and Israel struck Iran that sleeper cells deployed around the West could be used for retaliation. In June 2025, Border Czar Tom Homan joined Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures to discuss the very real threat of Iranian sleeper cells infiltrating the U.S. through Biden's open borders. Homan didn't mince words. These cells could be lying in wait, ready to strike at a moment's notice. And just days before that, we, that would be the Gateway Pundit, reported on the FBI's monitoring of possible domestic sleeper cells, highlighting how Biden's refusal to secure the border left America vulnerable to exactly this kind of retaliation. Even DHS Chief Kristi Noem, in her role under the Trump administration, issued a nationwide terrorism alert last June after intelligence suggested that Iran was gearing up for strikes on U.S. military facilities. Noem's vigilance stands in stark contrast to the Biden era's willful negligence, where dangerous Iranian nationals and other threats slip through unchecked. As Joe Hoft warned in a recent post, these sleeper cells that entered illegally under Biden and were protected from ICE by radical Democrats could soon begin terrorizing innocent Americans. Now, that point of view is from the Gateway Pundit by Jim Hoft on March 9th, and it's entitled Terror Warning, U.S. Intercepts Encrypted Communication on Iranian Plot to Activate Sleeper Cells in the West. Now, a somewhat different article appeared on News Nation. I believe that's newsnation.com, their website. It was entitled Bulletin Warning of Iran, of Iran-linked threats in U.S. reportedly blocked by the White House. And this was written by Taylor DeLantro and Marcus Espinosa. The subtitle said suspicious device. Well, this is a little different topic, but you have probably all heard of suspicious device found in New York City as FBI launches terrorism investigation. Again, this is from News Nation. The White House has reportedly halted a federal security bulletin warning law enforcement across the U.S. of a heightened threat potentially tied to the conflict with Iran. A Trump administration official speaking to Reuters on condition of anonymity to discuss internal government matters, said the bulletin, prepared by the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and National Counterterrorism Center, was intended for local law enforcement agencies nationwide. The official said the administration asked the bulletin's immediate release be put on hold to ensure accuracy. According to the official, the warning drafted by DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis lacked sufficient insight and was poorly written. The Daily Mail reported on Friday that the White House blocked the release of the bulletin, which contained specific details about how Iranian proxies could potentially carry out attacks inside the United States. The five-page document reviewed by the outlet warns of elevated threats by the government of Iran to U.S. military and government personnel and facilities, Jewish and Israeli institutions and their perceived supporters, and Iranian dissidents and other anti-regime activists in the United States were included in the threat. The report also notes that radicalized individuals from a range of ideological backgrounds could view the conflict or other geopolitical events as justification for violence, according to the Daily Mail. One section of the bulletin also outlines possible tactics Iranian proxies could use and provides guidance for local law enforcement on how to respond. A spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security told Reuters that it's standard practice to share intelligence bulletins with the White House for review before they're sent out. Typically, intelligence bulletins are issued directly to law enforcement agencies without White House input to avoid politicizing intelligence communications. However, the Daily Mail reported that DHS alerted the White House to the nationwide bulletin hours before it was scheduled for release, and top Trump officials and audited placed on hold. In a statement, the White House did not deny blocking the bulletin. And the statement said, quote, "The White House is coordinating closely with all government agencies to ensure information being disseminated is accurate, up-to-date, and has been properly vetted, even if that means taking additional time to review to ensure nothing is done in a vacuum, unquote. The developments come as the U.S. military campaign against Iran marks its largest operation in the Middle East since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Since last week, the State Department said the U.S. has completed more than a dozen charter flights and evacuated thousands of Americans from the Middle East. This again was in a website I'm not that familiar with called News Nation, and the title was Bulletin Warning of Iran-Linked Threats in U.S., reportedly blocked by the White House, dated March 9th. And I noticed it's copyright 2026 by NextStar, NextStar Media Incorporated. All right, well, I want to welcome you all to the program. I'm Lou Caverly. If you'd like to write to me with comments, a little bit of support for the program, we have no sponsors, we have no commercials. And if you'd like to support my program, you can write to me at Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And my address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I'll give that address a little later if you didn't have a pencil handy. You can visit my website, too, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And I'm going to be in the process of updating it over the next couple of weeks, put a couple of new essays in with the current news, and you can also find out all the different venues that you can use to listen to this program. Many of you get it on shortwave, WWCR, shortwave on Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. And that's at a frequency, if you happen to have a shortwave radio, of 4.840 megahertz. And to the best of my knowledge, and I've got to check this because I've been tied up the last few Saturdays, I think it still repeats Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on 7.490 megahertz. You can also hear us by going on the Internet to WWCR.com. That's WorldwideChristianRadio.com. And you can check their schedule to find out which transmitter it's available on. You may not have to do that, however, if you listen directly on the Internet. I haven't been in the habit of doing that myself. I usually check out the shortwave. You can also go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and check out the archives. So if you miss a program, you can always check it out, or if there was one in the past that was especially interesting, you can go to the archives by date and listen to the programs. And you can go to a couple of websites at our web mistress. I think that's the proper name, web mistress, Angel, has with some excellent past programs and current programs. She has some programs from, many of you may remember, Dr. Stan Monteith, wonderful interviewer. Sad to say he has passed on, but he had many, many, many good programs. And you can hear those on kstartalkradio.com. kstartalkradio.com. Also, Kingdom Star Radio, I believe, is still up and running. That's an alternative. So those of you that have the Internet, those are some of the ways you can listen to the program. Well, let's get back to a few things. A little change of pace here. California is always taking a beating among us conservatives. It is something, and as a former teacher, this interested me. This was on Fox News. At least 40% of California teachers plan to quit in the next decade. And there is a teacher shortage. I enjoy teaching very much, but I must admit that toward the end of my career, except when I was teaching in a Christian school, the public schools tended to be, well, frustrating. I guess is the word. The higher-ups, mainly because of legal suits and other political influence, had a hard time disciplining children. And if you don't discipline the children, they get out of hand, of course. That's just human nature. This is not a criticism of children. Adults are that way, too. I know myself, if I let myself go, I could just sit here all day and do nothing. Well, I get a little bored, admittedly. But the human tendency is not to work very hard if you don't have to. And a lot of our students have fallen into that. For one of the richest nations in the world, the American education system just isn't what it should be. And that's for many reasons. A lot of good teachers, some far left-wingers, but a lot of good conservative teachers who would like very much to be patriotic, to stimulate patriotism among their students, and give, well, good teaching to their students. But they are hamstrung all too often. So let's see what this one says. Again, the title said at least 40% of California teachers plan to quit in the next decade, according to a survey. This is by Joshua Q. Nelson, Fox News, March 9, 2026. Nearly half of California teachers plan to retire or quit in the next 10 years, according to a new survey. In California, the share of teachers who say they plan to retire in the next 10 years is between 40% and 49%. With a rough estimate of 45%. Ollie Kurtz, director of the Education Week Research Center, told Fox News Digital. Kurtz added that state teachers are on average older than teachers in many other states. I think she means the ones in California, according to the most recent federal data that's available. The average age of a California teacher is 45.5, while the average age in the U.S. is 42.9. I'll just interject, that doesn't seem like a drastic difference to me. 45.5, 42.9, barely 3 years, not even quite 3 years difference. So I don't think that's the major reason. Let me just give a couple of the highlights here. Nationwide, 36% of teachers say they plan to retire in the next 10 years. And according to EdSource, which apparently is a website, I guess, there's a lot of evidence that indicates that teacher morale has been declining nationwide and is at, by some measures, the lowest point in recent memory, unquote. And let's see now a few other important points here. The report also found that nearly half of all U.S. teachers say they expect at some point to work in a field other than education. All right, I don't think we need to say too much more about that. That pretty much speaks for itself. I'll just read one more paragraph. Fox News Digital previously reported on school districts grappling with the teacher shortage, detailing that retaining and recruiting teachers is a nationwide issue. Well, I can well believe that. That again was from Fox News. At least 40% of California teachers plan to quit in the next decade, March 9. All right. Once again, we'll switch gears here. Here's something from the New York Post, published March 8th and updated March 9th. Jesse Jackson's son blasts Obama, Biden, for using father's memorial to take shots at Trump. This is by Anna Young. Reverend Jesse Jackson's son ripped former presidents Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton for using the late civil rights icon's memorial service to take shots at President Trump. Jesse Jackson Jr. said the grandstanding Democrats didn't really know his father after they used their eulogies to bash the president, his policies, and his vision for America during Friday's star-studded send-off. And, of course, Mr. Jackson, that is Jesse Jackson Sr., died at age 84 last month at his Chicago home. Now, the grieving son, Jesse Jackson Jr., said, quote, "Yesterday, I listened for several hours to three United States presidents who do not know Jesse Jackson." And his son said that Saturday during a private memorial service at Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters in Chicago. And going on with that quote from Jesse Jackson Jr., he, meaning Jesse Jackson, maintained a tense relationship with the political order, not because the presidents were white or black, but the demands of our message, the demands of speaking for the least of these, those who are disinherited, the damned, the dispossessed, the disrespected, demanded not Democratic or Republican solutions, but demanded a consistent prophetic voice that at no point in time ever sold us out as people. And it speaks volumes about who the Reverend Jesse Jackson was. Unquote. During Friday's service at Chicago's House of Hope, Obama warned about the state of the nation, calling each day a, quote, new assault on our democratic institutions, unquote. And Joe Biden managed to get there, not quite sure how, but Biden said, each day we're told by those in high office to fear each other and to turn on each other, and that some Americans count more than others, and that some don't even count at all. Everywhere we see greed and bigotry being celebrated and bullying and mockery masquerading as strength. It's hard to hope in those moments. And this is Lou speaking. That it sounds about like Joe Biden. I'm surprised you can get the words out. But Kamala Harris also bragged a little bit. She predicted, Kamala Harris, quote, she said that as she bragged that she predicted, and this is in quotes, a lot about what's happening right now, unquote, during her remarks. Well, it would seem that Kamala is going to run for president again, so she's trying to get some votes there. And it does say that Clinton, who kept his eulogy mostly politics-free, remembered Jackson warmly as a good friend. So Clinton had a little bit of class, but some of these others did not. Let's see now. Well, those are the highlights there. That was from the New York Post, entitled Jesse Jackson's Son Blasts Obama, Biden by Using Father's Memorial to Take Shots at Trump, by Ariana. Make that Anna Young, March 8th, 2026. Well, here's a little bit of good news. Several years back, I'm not sure whether it was July 4th, but several years back, I watched on TV when they had fireworks, and President Trump in his first term was a guest of Kristi Noem at the South Dakota's Mount Rushmore. And they're going to have those fireworks again after a layoff of a few years. This is from the Gateway Pundit. Great news. National Park Service announces fireworks returning to Mount Rushmore for Independence Day, by Michael Chance, March 9th, 2026. The National Park Service has just announced that fireworks are returning to Mount Rushmore this year for Independence Day. This is great news, and the timing is perfect, considering that the country is celebrating its 250th year anniversary this very year. Let me see now. Tickets to the event at Mount Rushmore are going to be auctioned off to the public starting next week. The National Park Service announced Monday the return of Independence Day fireworks to Mount Rushmore for the U.S. 250th anniversary, following a five-year absence. They'll be launched Friday, July 3rd, National Park Service said. A lottery will be held April 8th through 12th for public tickets for the event. And I'll just interject there. I saw Mount Rushmore many, many years ago. Gosh, it's probably been over 40 years ago. It was quite a thrill. There you have, of course, the presidents carved in the granite, Washington, Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, and Thomas Jefferson. And it is a amazing thing. It goes on to say, in partnership with the state of South Dakota, we are excited to reintroduce a spectacular fireworks show as the highlight of Mount Rushmore's Independence Day commemoration. That was, those are the words of Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish and Wildlife and Parks, Dr. Jennifer Chatfield. She also said, we invite the public to enjoy the show and reflect on our nation's remarkable journey and the great patriotic leaders who established, preserved, and expanded our country's destiny. In just a few short months, the nation will throw the biggest birthday party ever for the United States of America, South Dakota Governor Larry Roden said. And he went on to say, South Dakota is the freest state in the nation founded on the principles of freedom. So it's only fitting to celebrate in our backyard. We look forward to celebrating at the iconic Mount Rushmore National Memorial, unquote. As you may recall, this kept getting rejected under the Biden administration. As the Gateway pundit reported in 2023, the Biden administration blocked fireworks at Mount Rushmore for three straight years. And Michael Chance, the author, says, Democrats don't like expressions of patriotism. Studies have shown that such events make people more likely to vote Republican. All right, well, that's interesting. Never thought about it that way, but it might well be true. And this, again, was from the Gateway Pundit and by Michael Chance, March 9th. So if you get out to South Dakota, I always remember that about South Dakota. I was a volunteer at an American Indian camp for American Indian boys and girls in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And having come from the East Coast, it was like a whole different world. You almost had that feeling that you were out in the Old West. Now, granted, it's only about halfway across the country when you look at a map, but there was a great deal of very, very interesting history there. The Sioux Indians, Lewis and Clark, all kinds of things that were just of great fascination to me. So if you get a chance to go out to South Dakota, I would certainly say it's a very, very, very interesting trip. Cold in winter, though, they told me, up in those Black Hills, you don't go up there in the winter unless you get four-wheel drive, at least at this particular location where we were. Beautiful country, though. Just beautiful. All right. Now, one of the unfortunate things, I must admit, I better watch this myself, is we're all getting too fat, at least an awful lot of us are. And in particular, our children are getting too fat. But here's something from Zero Hitch by Tyler Durden. Record childhood obesity surge puts MAHA health goals in focus. And that's Make America Healthy Again, MAHA. This appeared on Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. Childhood obesity in the United States has reached its highest recorded level. Renewing debate over school meals, physical activity, nutrition policy, and the role of weight loss medications for young people, according to The Hill. Data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that more than one in five children and teenagers were obese between 2021 and 2023. Up from 5.2% in the early 1970s. Let me interject there. One of five, that's 20% compared with 5.2%. 20 compared with 5.2 in the early 1970s. About 7% now meet the criteria for severe obesity. The issue has become part of the Make America Healthy Again initiative connected to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Discussions around solutions often center on improving school meals and increasing opportunities for physical activity. and I'll just interject there, having been around young people all my working life in schools, I have seen this drastically increase, particularly with the use of cell phones. Now, cell phones are wonderful. I'm using a cell phone at this very minute to transmit this program, where it will be recorded and then transmitted by shortwave and internet. But I have seen all too often, even the younger students spend the time between classes, and they do it during class if they're allowed to. They spend their time glued to the cell phones, playing games mostly, sometimes calling among the older students, but a lot of the younger ones in middle school and elementary play all kinds of games on the cell phone. I've seen them bump into each other because they're not watching where they're going because they're so glued to the cell phones. And the same with computers. When the kids get home at night, do they go out and play baseball? Do they go out and play basketball? All too many of them do not. They stay inside and just get attached to the computer screen or a cell phone screen. And, of course, this also has a drastic effect upon socialization. You don't make friends, not true friends, at least, if you never go outdoors, if you never meet anybody. So getting back to the article now from Zero Hedge, nutrition advocates say school meal programs play a critical role in children's diets. For some students, breakfast and lunch at school are the most nutritious meals of the day. Aaron Hyson, HYSOM of the Food Research and Action Center, said pandemic school closures disrupted that support. Quote, they're noting that this increase in obesity occurred during COVID-19 and that jump in childhood obesity happened during the years when millions of kids lost access to reliable school meals, she said. Again, that was Aaron Hyson, HYSOM. The Hill publication writes that only 9 states currently provide universal free breakfast and lunch to public school students, though others are considered, considering similar programs. Federal officials have also promoted updated nutrition guidance that emphasizes whole foods and discourages ultra-processed products, which account for more than 60% of children's daily calories. And, of course, I'll interject again, those ultra-processed are very often high in salt, high in various chemicals, many of which are practically unpronounceable. If you look at some of the ingredients you can pick up, little snacks, snack cakes, snack potato chips, it pays to look carefully. You can get some that are very natural and good. You can also get some that have a list of chemicals, maybe 10 lines long or longer, that have all kinds of chemicals, and you don't have the slightest idea what they are or what they do to you or what they do to your kids. Going on now, researchers say improving school menus and meals will require additional funding, trained staff, and better kitchen equipment so schools can prepare more fresh food. At the same time, the administration has approved requests from 18 states to remove soda and junk food from certain food assistance programs and announce new nutrition training requirements for future positions. I remember, and I'm going to interject again, many of you remember my dear wife Elizabeth, who died just over a year ago. Elizabeth was very careful what she ate. She had to be in a gluten-free diet to begin with, but she also avoided harmful foods, high salt, high calories, these unknown chemicals. And she never drank soda. I try never to myself. I must admit, I occasionally fall back and have an occasional Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper, something like that, but I don't make a habit of it, as some people do. And I can't believe that they would approve those soda pop things and other kinds of junk food for food programs. Apparently, some of them did, or have in the past, at least. Hard to believe, though. Going on, experts also point to declining physical activity, just as I was saying a minute ago, in schools as a contributing factor. Aaron Hager of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health said opportunities such as recess and physical education have gradually been reduced as schools focus more heavily on testing. Quote, many of those physical activity opportunities that a lot of us kind of take for granted have been taken away and replaced by a focus on standardized tests, she said. Okay, I'm going to get my 2 cents worth in. To me, recess was a big part of the school day. It let a student unwind. It was good because it gave a break. And I think any adult who's got any common sense knows you can't sit constantly, whether it be a concert, whether it be a sermon in the church. You just can't sit constantly and without having your attention wander. I can remember an ancient history class when I was in ninth grade. I would look out the window, and I was an A student for the most part. But I would still look out the window because I'd get bored with a teacher sitting there for 45 minutes straight. And I can't imagine today's students not having recess. To me, that's a big part of the day. It gives them exercise. It helps them unwind. It gives them a break from constantly sitting and having to listen to other people. And yes, some of the activities in the classroom are good. I'm not saying they're all bad, but to me, you've got to get out of the building, or at least down to the gym or someplace where you can get some exercise, except in bad weather. Well, okay, that's my 2 cents worth. But let's see now. Finishing up now with this article, medical treatments are also part of the conversation. The Food and Drug Administration has approved several obesity medications for adolescents ages 12 to 17, including Wegovy, Saxenda, Orlistat, and I'm not sure how you pronounce this one, QSYMIA, Crysemia, I'm not sure. Prescriptions for these drugs rose sharply after their approval, though they are still used only by a small share of eligible teens. And I'll just interject there, I don't like that sound unless the teens are really, really having kind of metabolic issues where the body just can't seem to get things under control. I don't like to take medications if I don't have to. Never have. Elizabeth never did either. Granted, there are times when you have to. You have no choice. But it's always been my philosophy, try not to take them if you don't have to. All right, and finishing up the last paragraph, Mike Hamer, H-A-E-M-E-R, of the American Academy of Pediatrics, said prevention remains the priority, but medication can help some patients. Well, for those children, especially those children with the most severe obesity, FDA-approved medications can be a helpful tool in the toolbox, he said. That is probably true. This was from Zero Hedge. Good article. Oh, Zero Hedge, record childhood obesity surge puts MEHA health goals in focus. By Tyler Durden, Tuesday, March 10th, 2026. All right, how many of you have a Ford automobile? You know, I've never had a Ford. My dad never was into Fords. He always got Chrysler products. Usually Plymouths, because they were inexpensive compared to some others. And apparently Ford is in a little bit of trouble now. This appeared on Fox News, March 8th. Ford in deep water after sweeping recalls in every model since 2020, with one exception. Over the past several years, Ford has found itself in hot water, with recalls sweeping through nearly every model in its lineup between 2020 and 2026, all but one. Only the Ford GT, a mid-engine two-seater sports car, escaped the issues that plagued the rest of the lineup, including problems with windshields, suspension, and rearview cameras. Discontinued after 2022, the model paid homage to the iconic Ford GT40, which dominated the 24 Hours of Le Mans in the 1960s, that great French race. While the second-generation Ford GT largely avoided recalls, both generations experienced some issues. The first faced potential airbag problems, while the second had possible hydraulic defects. In 2025, Ford set a record for the most recalls issued by a single automaker in a single year, issuing more than 150, nearly double the previous record of 77 set by General Motors in 2014. Let's skip down a little bit, find out some of the things that were going on. The surge was largely attributed to an aggressive strategy of initiating voluntary recalls before major incidents or widespread complaints emerged. And we'll jump down a little bit. Over 6 years, 16 Ford models, spanning SUVs and crossovers, trucks and pickups, performance cars and commercial vans were affected, totaling tens of millions of vehicles. Among Ford's seven SUV and crossover models, that is Escape, Bronco Sport, Bronco, Explorer, Expedition, Mustang, Mach-E, and Edge, each has been subject to at least one recall. Issues have included inverted or blank rearview camera images, cracked fuel injectors that pose fire risks, software faults that could cause brake malfunctions, and electronic door latch features and failures that may lead to lockouts or entrapment. That doesn't sound like a good thing, does it? Get stuck in your car and can't get out. That would be very, very unpleasant, if you ask me. Or if you get not quite as dangerous, perhaps, but if you get stuck outside the car and can't get in, that could be pretty aggravating, too. And let's see now. All five major Ford truck and pickup models, Maverick, Ranger, F-150, F-150 Lightning, and Super Duty, have also been affected. The most widespread problems involve electrical faults that can disable trailer brake lights, turn signals, or braking functions while towing, increasing crash risks. Some of those sound pretty dangerous. Fire risks, crash risks. Yep, that is not good for the Ford Motor Company. And closing out here, this Ford has largely phased out traditional sedans, leaving the Mustang as its only remaining passenger car. The coupe and convertible, produced since 2020, have faced issues, including rear view camera malfunctions. Well, I tell you what, this is Lou speaking now. This is the first car I've ever had, and I got it about a year ago. Not quite that. Just ever had a rear view camera. And I guess that's good. I can't say I use it a lot. As a driver who's been driving well over 50 years, I'm not in the habit of looking at a camera when I back up. I just turn around. But I guess it does have its advantages. Mine beeps very loudly, too, if there's a car behind me and I have it in reverse, even if I see the car coming. Well, I guess all these newfangled things are pretty nice. I used to be able to work on my own car a little bit, just for simple stuff. I remember I had a little Japanese-made Plymouth for 3 or 4 years when I was a newlywed with Elizabeth. And that car would sometimes what's the right word? It would leave you stranded, I guess is the way to say it. All of a sudden, without much warning, the engine would get real rough, needed new contact points. Many of you don't even know what those are. With fuel injection these days, But I actually carry the set of those little things in my glove compartment, and I could put them in myself. Couldn't always time it. I didn't have a timing light, so I couldn't always get the timing perfect, but I could get back home again if I had to, so I wouldn't be stranded. But those days are pretty much gone. I can change a tire still, even at my age, but I just don't try and do too much else because they've grown far too complicated for me, these automobiles of the present day. Well, that was from Fox News. Ford in deep water after sweeping recalls in every model since 2020, with only one exception. It was by Bonnie Chu, CHU, March 8th, 2026. All right, once again, if you'd like to write to me, give me some comments, hopefully maybe even give a little contribution to keep the program on the air. That would be very desirable. You can write to me at Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Now, I am located on the eastern shore of Maryland, not too far from Delaware. You look at the map. And we are having some very nice weather today, up into the 70s. But it's going to get cold. We don't even have a little bit of snow Thursday and Friday, so not springtime completely yet, but it's coming. All right, now here we have something from the Washington Times newspaper. Rights groups push Congress to rebuff COVID overreach. And I should mention I still have about 3 books left for the book that Elizabeth and I wrote together, COVID and Coming Chaos. When those are gone, I'm afraid they'll be gone. I'm going to keep 1 or 2 for myself, and there's at least 3 left. So if you'd like a copy of that book for free, just write to me, Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609, and I'll send it right out to you. If you can chip in a little bit of money to pay for the postage, usually it's no more than $5, and I'll have to limit it to 1 copy apiece since they are almost gone. And when they're gone, they're gone. I simply don't have the funds to have another set published. But it's still... there's a lot of pertinent information. Now, let's see what this one has to do. This was by Stephen Dinan, D-I-N-A-N, The Washington Times, Friday, March 6, 2026. 6 years after the COVID-19 pandemic began to rip through the U.S., spreading death and sparking draconian shutdowns, the country still has not had a full accounting of the dystopian restrictions the government imposed to try to control the virus and the public. A coalition of civil rights groups says it's time for that reckoning. They have launched the COVID Justice Resolution, a call for Congress to officially repudiate government overreach. They say it's not an attempt to assign blame, there is enough to go around, but to reassert constitutional boundaries that have slipped. And here's a quote, "There have never been any apologies," says Jeffrey A. Tucker, a leader of the effort and founder of the Brownstone Institute. He went on to say, these kinds of wounds are festering and real and widespread. I don't believe there will ever be healing from what happened until we get some culturally significant institutions saying very clearly, this was wrong. That has to happen. And think about it. It has not happened. He said he is looking for, quote, the biggest possible statement in the most painless way, unquote. The SARS-CoV-2 virus was first spotted in Wuhan, China, went on to kill millions of people worldwide. It still percolates today. And I'll just interject, I had tested positive for it, as you may remember, I guess maybe 2 or 3 months ago. I can't remember the exact date. I have always been a little skeptical about some of the tests, but supposedly it was positive for that. It wasn't a very severe case, more like a moderate cold, head cold. Back to the article. 6 years after it was first crested, The world's dead still has no consensus on its origins, nor the actual death toll attributed to the virus. Although the medical community proclaims a kind of unanimity about treatments, the public, after conflicting advice on masking at the start of the pandemic and on vaccine efficiency or efficacy during the crisis, is less certain. The social measures put into place are even more controversial. Police stationed at state borders to block entry. Employees divided into essential and non-essential. Churches shuttered for months, canceling Easter and Christmas services. Classes canceled with students allowed back only after proof of emergency authorized vaccines. For all that, Mr. Tucker said, there came a tipping point at which politicians were happy to put the whole thing behind them. And this is a quote from him. The whole thing was so insane, it was crazy. It was like a level of clownish evil. It's not clear when it stopped happening. It just sort of slowly faded away. We weren't even sure when the pandemic ended. We don't even know that. The channel just changed, and we're left with such pain and suffering. The Reckoning Resolution is backed by his outfit, as well as the Health Freedom Defense Fund, Children's Health Defense, the Independent Medical Alliance, Stand for Health Freedom, and the Autism Action Network. They called, as they call out, the stay-at-home orders, school closures, mandatory shuttering of non-essential private businesses and houses of worship, masking and vaccine mandates, social media pressure campaigns that trended toward censorship, and the massive amount of taxpayer money pumped into battling the virus and vacilling the economy the government had shut down. The resolution, which Mr. Tucker said the Brownstone Institute is looking for a senator to sponsor, expresses profound regret for all of that. And I'm going to jump down a little bit. The Coast Guard announced last week that it was reinstating with back pay 56 members who were booted after refusing to take the vaccines. And we all remember one of our faithful supporters for at least a couple of years, a doctor in the general area of Pennsylvania, lost his job because he wouldn't take this so-called vaccine. I think all of you listening know that it wasn't a vaccine in the classical sense. It didn't prevent the illness. Vaccines are supposed to prevent an illness. When you get a smallpox vaccine, you're not supposed to get smallpox. A measles vaccine is supposed to protect you. But over and over again, and many people I know personally, some of my cousins, the vaccine didn't stop you from getting it. They claim that it made it less severe, but I have my doubts about that. Back to the article. The Pentagon said in December that more than 8,000 troops were fired for refusing the vaccine from August 24th, 2021 to January 10th, 2023. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered his department to review some 3,000 cases to see whether people who were given general discharges should be upgraded to honorable discharges. Jay Bhattacharya, who was a professor at Stanford University and a severe critic of lockdowns and mask mandates, now leads the National Institutes of Health, and as of February 18th, also runs the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. A federal judge has ruled in favor of the Central Intelligence Agency, which had fired the former Defense Department doctor who pushed the mandatory vaccines on the Pentagon. Legally, though, the precedent for the firings remains. The Supreme Court declined on February 23rd to hear two cases from Air Force personnel who were dismissed after refusing the Defense Department's 2021 vaccine mandate. The airmen had asked for back pay and declarations that their religious rights had been violated. Likewise, and budget-wise, tens of billions of dollars in COVID cash remain unspent. Senator Joni Ernst, Iowa Republican, proposed legislation in November to claw back some $65 billion. Let me jump down a little because I see our time is not too far from the end. But today, the Inspector General said the government needs to take urgent steps to recover the money before fraudsters seize it. Now, let's check. We've heard about all this fraud in Minnesota. And where there's money to be made, there is fraud to be, what's the right word there? Perpetrated, I guess. And Inspector General Anthony Desposito said, we've identified where the money is. There is no excuse for delay and no acceptable outcome other than returning these dollars to the American people. He and other inspectors general are still bringing fraud cases, and the Justice Department is prosecuting them. They billed to double the statute of limitations on prosecutions of pandemic unemployment fraud from 5 to 10 years, cleared the House last March with strong bipartisan support. But the Senate has taken no action on it. And this, again, was from the Washington Times. I've read much of the article, but there is more to it if you want to go to it. Washington Times, Friday, March 6th, 2026, just a few days back, by Stephen Dina. Rights groups push Congress to rebuff COVID overreach. That's one thing our book talked about, the overreach, the unconstitutional overreach by governors, other persons in authority, and in the end, did it do any good? The masks didn't. That's what they tell us. The masks were worthless. And if not worthless, highly ineffective. And did it do any good to close down schools? They left the big stores like Walmart open. Well, I don't know. But if you like a copy of that book, write to me, Will Cavalry, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. It'll have to be first come, first serve. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in again next week for the Divided Kingdom. Good night. We'll be right back.